Hey guys, welcome back. We're the Story Crafters. My name is Jeff. Directly below me, we have Nicole, Game Master Moms. Directly next to her, we have Charlie, the Ink GM. And above him, we have Jared, the world's okayest crafter. Welcome back. If this is the first time tuning in, this is episode 3. And I think it's going to be pretty good, guys. I am very much looking forward to our topic and our lore today. But before we get into all of that, how about we roll initiative?
Hey. Oh boy, it always goes so well.
So good indeed.
Okay, I'll take it.
All right, 25 to 20.
That's cute.
this is a good sign.
Yes.
15 to 20, anything?
Really?
Okay, this is really following episode.
Yes.
Okay, cool, great. 10 to 15?
13.
13.
There we go.
Nicole was leading the charge here, then 5 to 10.
I got a 9.
Okay, you got a 9, Nicole.
I got a 7.
Nicole, okay. Charlie, Jared, me. Here we go. Nicole,
love it.
You're kicking it off. Tell us what you did since last episode.
All right. Well, since last episode, the biggest thing that I've done is I went to my first convention.
Yeah,
it was awesome. I went to IckyCon in Round Rock, which is close to Austin, Texas. And it's an anime convention, but there's also a lot of like tabletop gaming stuff, console gaming stuff. So that was really fun, really overwhelming, but I met a lot of cool people, had some really good connections with some of my local-ish game shops, like not my game shop that I usually go to, but some that are within an hour's drive of me. So that was a really good connection. Kind of in talks with them about maybe coming over to run a few kids games for them during like spring break and summer break and stuff like that. And hopefully if all goes well, they're all interested in carrying my Etheria book series when that is finally out. So
that'd be really cool.
That'll be cool. Be nice to actually see it on a shelf somewhere instead of like just an online only situation.
Yeah. So. Out in the wild.
Out in the wild, yeah.
Well, guys, I think if we use our best Game Master accents and voices to call up these stores and ask if they have it in stock, I think that counts as the help action, so you can have advantage.
This is true. That's the side quest for this for this episode. You have to call your game store and say, "Do you have this book?
Do you have it in stock by any chance?"
I'll let you guys know once it's actually available. It's not yet, but it should be this year. That'll be a little side quest that I'll reward you with something with if you call your local game store and ask for my book.
Will Hound Tower like crazy.
100%.
I love it.
That sounds that sounds really cool.
It was super cool, really fun experience. Saw like so many amazing cosplays, most of which I did not recognize because I'm not that into anime, but they looked amazing. Got to hang out with some really cool people from our local Renaissance Fair, which is Sherwood Forest Fair in McDade, Texas, which is a great fair. It's not huge, but it's been there long enough where it's very well established. There's a lot of great vendors and a lot of great food, and it's very family friendly. So if you're in the area of Central Texas, definitely check that out too. And last update I have from the con is I bought a lightsaber and I'm going to learn how to do lightsaber tricks.
Nice.
So on the lookout for that.
That's the most important question though. What color blade did you choose?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So it's color changing. So I can like go from, good side to bad side, whatever I want, really.
We'll need to see your progress on the Obi-Annie spin.
Yes. I'm working on it. I've got my very first attempt. I'm going to post a reel of, it'll probably be up by the time this episode comes out. So y'all can go look for that on the Game Master Mom Instagram and see how I'm doing.
Also, since you can change colors, We're going to need you to like do a whole parody version of I Have the High Ground.
Yeah. I just awesome. Do like both parts of everything. Yeah. I can basically just play act out all of Star Wars. And, like mash it
sounds
together.
Like a good starting point.
Yes.
Have you guys I seen that nothing. Meme of oh, it's Ewan McGregor like and he's at his grill and he's like, so then Anakin sounded like this.
No. Oh my god. I don't know if I actually recall having seen this before or if it's just that I want to see that so bad my brain is like, yes, this is what it would look like.
But, my favorite edit is they dubbed over Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck's voices for Obi-Wan being Mickey and Anakin being Donald Duck. It's a must watch.
Oh. back to D&D.
I was thinking I'd go right to bed after this. I already know what I'm looking up.
Oh gosh. And the sprout of our next podcast. Just kidding. Oh man. That's awesome. When you go to Ren Faire's, Nicole, do you have a theme that you normally go for? Or do you elf it up the whole time or do you do different outfits or costumes or however that works?
Yeah, it kind of depends. Elf is definitely my most common one. I've done like Tavern Wench for like Oktoberfest. I've done some like Hobbit type things. So mix it up every once in a while.
There you go.
Nice. It's awesome.
How big was the con roughly like attendance? Like in the like hundreds, thousands?
Definitely thousands, but I don't I couldn't tell you for sure how big it was, but they've been around for a long time, so pretty big con.
That's awesome.
One day I'll get to one.
Mm-hmm. This year.
Yes, manifested.
Yeah, well, I guess there is one in Virginia Beach at the convention center, isn't there, normally?
There are a few, you know, TTRPG fantasy theme related, yeah.
Yeah, might be able to get down to one of those.
There's at least Berg Quest that will be happening. I'll be going back to that this year. Very excited in Williamsburg, so that'll be a ton of fun.
Yeah. Man. All right, well, Nicole, does that wrap up your turn?
Yeah, I think that's enough about what I've been up to.
Charlie, what you got with the one deck?
So a couple things I've been excited to share is telling you guys a little bit of some interesting moments in some of the D&D sessions that I've been having with my various campaigns. And one of which was very interesting. We got to do a ship-to-ship combat between four ships, not one, not two, not three, but four ships in combat. And it was absolute chaos and fantastic.
I've been dying to ask how that went, running a pirate campaign. It's not something I've even tried to do yet. So I was curious. I was curious how that all went.
Funny enough, this ship-to-ship combat was not the pirate-related one. This was the more political intrigue, and they got ambushed by the military on the ship that they were on. And because they decided to stop for a brief moment, it allowed a perfect opportunity for several of the military ships to come in a pincer maneuver. And absolute chaos. It was fantastic. But they managed to capsize two boats. Their ship was cracked in half and sank, but they managed to kill everyone on the biggest ship and keep it from sinking, and now that is the ship that they're commandeering. Fantastic.
Sounds like a win.
Yeah. It was a ton of fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Best ship combat encounter I've ever run. It was that session. Another really fun session that we had was with my players just coming into a new land and they got attacked, you know, classic encounter kind of scenario. And they went down to sit down for potentially a long rest. And they discovered kind of like a lens from a satellite that is magically enchanted. And so it allows the ability to attune to it and cast scrying once per day. And the players got into a, not so much an argument, but rather they took sides amongst the six players of who, two of the players of who should be able to use it. And so you had team, you know, A and team B essentially, and it turned into a Survivor-esque scenario where they, where we passed around pieces of paper and everybody casted their vote. And I kid you not, I did not look at the votes and I read them out one by one. And we literally went a vote for A, a vote for B, a vote for B, and a vote for A, a vote for B, and a vote for A. It was a dead tie.
Wow.
And one of the players who has been very low key with his back, with his backstory, but did recently, you know, unveil quite a bit and why he needed to scry. And the other player was somebody who has, who's a cleric and has been trying to communicate with her sister that's been, you know, captured and now has an opportunity to scry on her to see her condition, everything. The players were split between those two of like, well, he's not asked for anything. She's been able to at least do something. And then others are like, yeah, but she's brought this forward and she, you know, this is a perfect opportunity. And he brought forth, you know, this backstory and a concern for it. And so what happened was the player did this awesome thing where he actually was like, he goes, all right, I'm going to my character is going to try to leave the party and is going to go invisible. And I leave and I'll make a new character. We'll see about introducing it next session. And I said, that's if you can get away. And so then we turned into an initiative order of the group trying to stop him and from leaving the group. And it turned into this epic, like it was a combat round initiative, but it wasn't combat. It was everybody trying to grapple. One of the players, you know, talked like gave like this like six really intense 6-second monologue, and we timed it, and it was really intense. And then one of the players who was last in the initiative order had looked back at their notes from like 4 months ago, when he had dropped a little bit of lore about his character and brought that up. And everybody at the table had like goosebumps and we were just like, whoa. And he was like, I'll tell you what, roll a persuasion check with advantage to see if my, you know, if my character stops trying to run away. And he succeeded. And it turned into this really big moment that like brought the group, you know, together. And it was awesome. It was one of my favorite sessions I've had in a while. And jeez, it was just, it was so cool doing, because you don't have too many times where organically it presents itself where you have to do an initiative order on the fly as a GM and it's not combat related. You know, usually you know what you're going into with that, but with that one, I was like, okay, yeah, we're going to do initiative order. And I was just like pointing to each player and I had no idea where this was going to go or what was going to happen. And it was, I was on the edge of my seat as a GM and it was so much fun and exciting. Yeah, that was a,
so
that was
satisfying blast. When as the DM, you're still surprised with things that happen in a session.
Yes. You know? I have goosebumps right now, like thinking back to that session. It was so much fun. Yeah, that was really great. But yeah, that was the big thing that's happened between now and last time we recorded. Those two monumental sessions were pretty awesome. I've had a couple other things with Ink GM that's been pretty cool. One of which is by the time this episode comes out, we'll already kind of be in the throes of it. But I'm going to be in a competition for entrepreneurs. And I really want to win because if I do, I get to be featured in Forms magazine as, you know, with, as Ink GM and everything, and get to bring tabletop role-playing games to that level, that kind of, I don't know, perspective. It's really hard to, you know, explain it, but I just think that would be so cool to be able to bring tabletop role-playing games as, you know, this monumental thing to Fork Magazine and just to that part of part of the world and bring it to that perspective. So really hoping that'll happen. So I'll be needing everyone's help when we get there. And hopefully by the time this episode comes out, I think we'll be in the second round of voting for the competition. So hopefully I'm still in it by that time. So, but yeah, that's big stuff on my end.
So exciting. Well, best of luck. Obviously, you'll do great, I'm sure. So
thank you.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we'll have
everybody, everybody listening, since that's going to be in the throes of it, share all of everything that's going to come out for it to help Charlie out there. So
please.
Yeah, definitely do that.
So my last session was session 30 of the Abyssal Tide, my homebrew pirate campaign.
Yes.
And my players are finally back out at sea being sort of pirates.
All right.
This was the session that I was very excited for because it was, again, coming off the back of, I think, the session that I talked about in last episode where there was the siege of a major city. This session was the biggest lore dump I've gotten to do as a DM, which was exciting. And so the players spent most of the session on the back of a deceased ancient dragon turtle that they came across, didn't really know what it was because the turtle was, you know, close to a mile across, just a massive creature. They knew that it wasn't really an island, but they didn't know exactly what it was. One of my players got like a 26 on a history check, and I was able to pull up some things that their character would have known, you know, as a child growing up, some like tales of lore and legend. So they encountered a golden dragon that was actually living on the back of this ancient dragon turtle, who, you know, came in guns blazing, and they were actually able to kind of talk it down and befriend it to some extent or another, which was kind of a proud DM moment, because that's probably a first for my players, not just going in guns blazing themselves. But it was cool because then this is the first time in these 30 sessions, you know, over a year and a few months of play, that they've actually talked to an ancient, very powerful being who was able to bestow a lot of knowledge and wisdom and things. And I know it can always go one of two ways, but I got to do something that I'm kind of a sucker for. I got to say the title of our campaign, The Abyssal Tide, in like a monologue. And one of my players leaned over. He's like, he said the thing. So that was fun for me, at least. It was pretty cool.
The Leonardo DiCaprio.
Right. As far as creativity goes, I was very proud of that session because it was like, you know...
Yeah.
Not every session you get to spend on the back of an ancient dragon turtle. So it was a lot of fun. It was a good session. It was a good session.
Creatively, that is fantastic. Hats off to you, my man. That is, I absolutely love the idea and the mythology around how that all happened in your world. But I also have to say too, yes, hell yes. That is one of my favorite moments as a GM, no matter how big or how small. Whenever I have a player roll successfully or even like really high or oh man, let it be a nat 20 on a history check and I get to just drop some lore. Oh, right. those are moments that I get so excited about.
I had like a poem written and everything that would have been like told around a campfire, you know, and as for this character, as they were a child, he plays a lizard folk, this character. So, you know, if you guys are familiar at all with lizard folk, grew up in a very like brutal tribal, you know, not very well, it's culture, but maybe not civilized, you know, group. So it was like the stuff of legend that like the shaman would have shared, you know, with the young lizards. So it was pretty cool. It was one of the things that I had in my notes, and I'm like, I desperately want to find a place that I'm able to share this, but it's like it really depends on how the session goes. And then with the 26 roll, I'm like, yes. So yeah, it was cool. Aside from that, I've been painting some minis, actually. I'm looking at them now. Here's a little wizard guy for those of you watching. I don't know how well you'll be able to see. I'll post a picture of him sooner or later here. But yeah, besides that, I haven't been up to a whole lot as far as crafting goes. I've been busy, which, you know, is life. So that's how it goes sometimes. Jeff, what's been going on with you?
I got around to crafting some. I actually started crafting again, which is nice. Those stackers I talked about last time, I just sat down and I just started cutting foam. I put on the Lord of the Rings and I cut, I don't even know how many strips of 1 inch by 1 inch XPS rips on the hot wire cutter. I was going cross-eyed, man. but they turned out all right. They're pretty cool. They're very versatile, very modular. So they'll come in handy. But I did my first Rogue Game Master game.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thanks, yeah. I did a one-shot. It was interesting. It was really good. It was a lot of fun. I have thinking to do if I really want to continue to do that. I have a bad habit of turning the things that I love into money that becomes then burnout, and I don't know if I want to go that route. So we'll see. It's really cool. I had a great time. The players had a great time. I was at one of my favorite breweries. So it was a good vibe. Everyone was hanging out. Turns out I went to high school with one of the guys. Never met him before, but turns out I went to high school with him. So it was fun. They liked the set that I made for them. And it was, like I said, it's a primer for a main campaign if I want to keep going with it. It was different. That's for sure. It's very different than a home game. That's for sure.
It looked awesome. It looked awesome.
Yeah, I've great.
DM'd for a couple groups of, not random people, but in a setting similar to that. And yeah, it's a whole different animal than, there's no way to be able to like prep and, as far as expectations of like,
And I had never met any of these guys.
Me. Right, exactly. My players still surprise me, but then when you're DMing for strangers, like it could go.
And I had a friend of mine who I didn't intentionally plant him in it. I literally just said, "Hey, I'm running this one shot," and he was like, "Oh, I'll watch the Rogue Game Master website when it goes live." So I just texted him and said, "Hey, it's live. If you want to play, it's $5." So he signed up, and he was like, it might help to have somebody at the table. It's like, sweet, thank you. He ended up, because he has a medical condition, he wasn't able to make it. So now I was like kind of halfway relying on at least having somebody that I knew at the table to at least help me like socially and like, with my anxiety with that. Like, so, and I was just like, oh crap. guess we're just doing this live. it was a really good experience. I just don't know if it's for me, but we'll see.
Which is valid. Valid.
Absolutely.
Always good to have the options though.
Yeah, I've also I did a lot of painting in December for different commissions for people. And I was like, oh my god. So January, I'm not painting at all. I painted one model, which Jared, I actually think you will thoroughly enjoy. I'll send a picture over to the group and everything, and I'll post a thing in this video too. It is a pirate captain.
Head on.
And I think you'll get a kick out of it. It's pretty cool.
I'm excited to see him. I loved the displacer beast that you shared.
I was going to say.
Oh, yeah, that was
awesome. I love that it's purple. That's pretty sick.
That was so a that was a 3D print, I think, from Artisan Guild.
Nice. Okay.
But I'm not quite sure. That was basically just dry brushing pretty much the whole thing. And just dry brush up layers, start with a really dark purple and just progressively get up to a pink. Dot the eyes and the little tentacle thingies in white, and then you hit them with a GW Tesseract glow.
Nice. And
boom, that's the mini.
It was well done.
Super easy.
He was a beautiful mini.
Anyone can do it.
Speaking of minis,
what they say, but
there's a mini that I really want to get my hands on that would be a great one for dry brushing, and it's a tree Rex. Is a whole T-Rex that is just entirely out of wood, like corrupted wood, and it looks amazing. Awesome. And I want to get it so bad. Yeah,
that sounds good. Do you know who makes that?
I'd have to look it up. It's one of those things where it's I don't have a 3D printer, you know, so. It's tough when you find really cool STL files and you go to their site and then they go, oh, well, here, you know, you can find it with our partnerships. And then they list a ton. And then you go to a handful of them and they do have several of their files, but they don't have that one specific one you're looking for. Mm-hmm. And then you just kind of lose hope and you're like, oh, maybe it's lost for not. But no, that one was really cool. I'm really determined. I got to figure it out.
Well, to get it if you do buy the STL, I have a 3D printer and I will hand deliver it to you.
I don't know how we haven't realized, or I haven't realized this at least. Yes. Okay. We're going to make that work.
Yep.
It's, don't worry,
it's,
audience.
It's resin. It's resin, not FDM. So it'll actually come out in detail. So.
Nice.
So. There you go.
Yeah.
Problem solved.
There you go. Your mini problem is solved. Or just got significantly worse, one or the other.
That's what I was just going to say. It's a blessing and a curse having a 3D printer, because it's like, it's a double-edged sword of like, is this really a good thing? I don't know.
I
you can have it all.
I went at one point with wargaming stuff. I printed so many armies from this one company that I'm like, what was I thinking? I kid you not. I'm looking at my shelf right now. I probably have 200 minis up there that are unpainted and or in various stages of different paintings. Yeah, it's bad. I have a problem.
That's I posted on Instagram. I mean, by the time this comes out, it will have been, you know, close to a month ago, but I posted 5 minis that I'm slowly working through. In fact, the wizard is one of those that I'm going to feature in like posts on Instagram and stuff that'll kind of have like a loose ongoing story with those minis. But those are all ones that I'm digging through the drawer of like, these are cool minis that are just sitting here doing nothing. But yeah, I just discovered like a bin full of minis that I 3D printed and put in a cabinet and forgot about, and like, oh, should probably do something with those.
Literally happened to me. Oh my God.
It's a good problem to have, I guess, but you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh well.
Yeah. You can either look at it as a bucket full of problems or a bucket of awesome opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right. Yeah,
is it a pile of shame or pile of potential?
Ooh, pile of potential.
World may never know. Happen.
I love that. Let's get that trending. The pile of potential. I'm using that from now on. Forget the pile of shame. The pile of potential.
I will say I do like the Army of Gray. That's just kind of a cool name. So it's like, I kind of do like that. Oh man. Anyways, we've blabbered on enough about what we've done. We're going to take here just a quick little break. We're going to talk about some lore here coming up. We're going to talk about Phandalin. I'll see you in a second. Hey guys, welcome back. We're the Story Crafters once again. If you're just tuning in with us, we're about to get into the lore today. We're going to kind of break it down to a little bit of a basic level for the beginner D&D player, maybe never played before or only done like one or two different sessions or things. We are going to look into the town of Phandalin. This is coming to you from the Forgotten Realms fandom. And basically, Phandalin is a city and a village in the Sword Coast North that was basically raided by orcs and then subsequently abandoned. It was eventually resettled about 5 years after that raid by the orcs, and it was reclaimed by a bunch of farmers and prospectors. the after the town was reclaimed, the city was kind of brought back up, but it was brought back up modestly and architecturally boring, you could kind of say. It's very typical, like stucco houses, things like that. It looks like a medieval, your typical medieval city, and ruins. But the big draw with Phandalin is that it's located just south of Neverwinter, which is a pretty large establishment in the Sword Coast. It's one of the largest cities. A lot of the government politics that, you know, flood the coast and the Sword Coast happen through Neverwinter. So with that, you get a lot of trade to and from, which lead to a trail called Tribor. And from there, Tribor splits off into a couple different D&D adventures. One being the Lost Mines of Phandelver, which is one of the starter editions of Dungeons & Dragons, and a very good way to get introduced to Dungeons & Dragons. It is the first game I ever played personally, and I didn't even know it at the time. The GM for me, he was a friend of mine, and he was playing, and it were going on, and I was the lore keeper at the time, and I was just taking notes, and it literally, I did not realize that we were playing a pre-written for about five sessions, and I would write down like every little thing, and I'm thinking, dude, you're amazing, this is so cool.
That's awesome.
And it's a very good first adventure to start with. It begins Phandalin, when on your way into Phandalin, there's a great encounter that happens. But the Phandalin is also a great jumping point to the Icespire Peak adventure as well. Talking about its politics and how it contributes to the Sword Coast, it's originally for, after it was reclaimed, like we said at the beginning, for farming. The Phandelver Pact was made by a bunch of mages and enchanters through the farming community to basically give them access to the mines and this forge of spells in a place called Wave Echo Cave. And this Wave Echo Cave is where the bulk of the Lost Mines of Phandelver takes place in. And it's just a really awesome, I don't want to spoil the adventure if you do end up running it, but man, there are some things in that encounter, in that cave, that if you're not ready for it, good Lord, there's a TPK waiting for you.
But give us one.
One, there's, okay, no, I can't. There's a thing that happens. I'm not going to say where it is in the cave. There's a thing that happens, and there's a valve involved. I'm not going to tell you what to do with the valve.
Of course.
But that valve is pivotal in survival. Let's put it that way. Anyways.
I feel like the meme with Frodo, where he's like, okay, you keep your secrets.
There are two pretty notable locations in the town of Phandalin. One being the Sleeping Giant. And it is a rundown and dirty, kind of dangerous watering hole that would be frequented by a band of bandits known as the Red Brands. And which is, funnily enough, operated by a dwarf, even though the whole group of Red Brands are primarily human. It's kind of cool that a dwarf is running that bandit group. And after that, to hit one other really cool point of lore for it, is the Tresendar Manor, which is more of a castle, really. And it was this ancient being that was abandoned after the raid by the orcs. And in the late 15th century of the Forgotten Realms, which is set in DR, which is Dale Reckoning, I believe, the cellars that were in the bottom that once were like a safe haven, they were basically ransacked. And the place was turned into the hideout for the Red Brands. So then some things happen, and you can play the adventure and find out for yourself. But Vandalin, it's a pretty cool spot, I think. There's a lot of really great jumping off points for a campaign. You could start your own homebrew game in there, use one of those pre-writtens as a jumping off point for a campaign if you wanted to. It's a great spot in my opinion. And I think it's there. I think it's adequately used in the lore for a reason. Have any of you guys had any dealings in Phandalin before?
Never made it all the way there. It was my first D&D ever, actually. We got, I think, two sessions in and made it past the first couple potential encounters there. And that's where we left off before moving on to other things. But it's like about as classic of a medieval town D&D setting that you can find. I think it's great, both from like beginner player, and I think the Lost Mines of Phandelver is like a great first stab as a DM too. If you're looking for a pre-written something to try out as a DM, it's perfect.
All right, so that was a little bit about Phandalin. Like I said, it's a great jumping off point. You want to start something there for your own game, go for it. I think you have a lot of opportunity there. But before we get into our topic that we normally do, I think, Nicole, you have something to share, I think. So why don't you go ahead and take it from here?
Yeah, I just wanted to do a quick little promo for our friends over at the Kids Table. They are absolutely awesome. They do a family-friendly, kid-focused, original, actual play D&D campaign where kids are the players, and it's amazing. And they just premiered season 2 of the Kids Table over on YouTube, and you can also listen to it on all the podcast sites. Episode 1 of season 2 came out on January 14th, so by the time this comes out, should be available everywhere. They might even have another episode up of season 2, but definitely check that out. Season 1 is awesome. Had me on the edge of my seat. It's very creative. It's wonderful to see kids playing at the table. And now for season 2, they're all a couple years older, which is really cool to see the development in the kids as well. So definitely go check that out. We'll put the link to their YouTube channel in the show notes for the Kids Table.
Awesome. That's awesome. Kids playing D&D. That's just so cool.
Speaking of playing D&D with kids, Nicole, you just came out with an awesome character sheet.
Yes. Oh, I did. Man, I forgot to mention it earlier in the what I've been up to. But yeah, I have been working on this kid-friendly D&D character sheet for months, like since last summer. And it's finally available. And yeah, people can download a full color, beautiful copy or a little bit less full color printable copy through my email list. So I'll leave the link to that in the show notes as well. But be subscribed to my Game Master Mom email list, which I promise I don't spam people on. It's just for updates about my projects and the book and eventually discount codes and stuff like that when you can buy it. So you want to be on it anyway. But right now, if you subscribe to it, you get the download of the kids' character sheet that you can use at your table.
Definitely, I haven't printed them yet, but I am incredibly excited too, because it is like the hardest thing to find, and the one you've created looks absolutely perfect. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, I'm going to definitely be using it with Eli. That's for sure.
Yeah, my niece is eager to join, and so I'm definitely looking to make a couple copies of those so we can start building some characters and stuff to bring her into our family campaign. So,
yes.
Exciting.
Love it. Man, so that was some lore, and then we have some awesome news from the kids' table and from Nicole with her Game Master Mom stuff. And now for everything that we've all been waiting for, the topic of the episode, and it is following in good faith to Phandalin here, and we're going to keep with some settings. What's everyone's favorite setting in Dungeons & Dragons? And we're going to continue our initiative order. Nicole.
That's me, yeah? Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, this is a hard topic for me because I have actually never played a Wizards of the Coast Dungeons & Dragons setting before. Never run one, never played in one. I do pretty much exclusively homebrew stuff. So, yeah, nothing wrong with that.
But that's okay.
I have been really wanting to run a game or play in a game if somebody wants to invite me to one, but probably run a game that's set in the Underdark. I'm like very interested in that as a setting. I just think it's so cool, like all the underground like tunnels and cavern systems and all the ecology and the different kinds of like glowing fungus and like all the cool beasties that are down there. I just think it would be so fun to, you know, take the stuff that has been written. I mean, there's a ton of source material from Wizards of the Coast for the Underdark and then kind of embellish it. I am, you know, again, as a new-ish D&D player, some of my inspiration comes from playing D&D adjacent things like Baldur's Gate. So if you think about like Baldur's Gate 3, like the way that the Underdark is portrayed there, I think it's just amazing. So if I was going to run a game, I definitely like lean into more of that sort of thing. And yeah, if anybody wants to buy me like a random present or something, you could gift me the like Out of the Abyss source book. That could be cool. And you know, maybe someday I'll read it.
I just started playing Baldur's Gate. I'm like a year and a half behind on everything, but I just started playing Baldur's Gate. It's awesome. I know that's not news to anyone else because, you know, it's been around. But yeah, the Underdark, the way they portray it in that is beautiful.
Yeah. Just all the like bright colors and stuff. So cool.
Yeah. Very vibrant and alive.
Mm-hmm. Like also secretly as like a crafter and many painter, I'm like, think of all the cool stuff I could paint for that game.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's definitely a goal sometime. No time soon. Eventually, I would love to make a full set for Underdark and do a bunch of giant mushrooms and fungi and stuff. It just looks so fun.
Yeah.
That would be really cool to see you do that. I would love that to see what you come up with.
Yeah, seriously.
One day.
Yeah. So one of my absolute favorite settings is the Spelljammer setting in D&D. I just absolutely love it, and it's not anything that I've had the ability to run full campaign in that, but I would absolutely love to one day. I've used it for so much inspiration because I love how creative they got in bypassing a lot of the physics and a lot of the you transition with gravities and atmospheres and just having these, you know, still having that open air feeling literally with these spaceships, but your classic sci-fi fantasy spaceship and still having this sword and fantasy kind of vibe to it. The Spelljammer, and again, speaking of colors, that's one of the other things that attracts me a lot to a lot of Spelljammer things and monsters and terrain and stuff. It's just I love the variety and how wild it gets. It's you know, you talk a lot about the Underdark, you talk a lot about the Feywild and everything there, but Spelljammer also just has some wild creatures and wild concepts and contrasts. And yeah, it's one of my favorite settings personally.
I was, when I started writing my homebrew pirate, I was like this close to shifting it over to Spelljammer and doing like space pirates instead, because it's awesome. I just want to basically have justify printing and painting a bunch of like the, I think they're plasmoid, the like amorphous blue blob characters. They look super fun.
I just had a new player in one of my campaigns come and join, and we did a version of a plasmoid. And the idea that he was crafted, his essence was crafted from a collapsed star. And it's, I just, there's so many really cool things about Spelljammer, and I think a lot of that attributes to the fact of it's a fascinating setting, but it's also been contributed to and reworked and added on to, I mean, since the second edition of D&D all the way to the most recent Spelljammer set with 5e. So to work with there.
Yeah, there's a lot of history.
Very rich. Yeah.
I think it's cool too, because when I
really pretty environment, like this gorgeous, all the artwork that I've seen from Spelljammer is like to die for.
I think it's cool too, when I think of D&D, I think of medieval, you know, knights fighting dragons on horseback and stuff, and I love the way that they've found, they blend the worlds together where you can have what is truly like a sci-fi Star Trek-y, you know, sort of setting that still finds a way to make sense with everything else, I think is so cool. The way that, you know, you kind of thread the needle there, and you can have both and they still kind of fit, you know, under the same umbrella of it's D&D.
One of my favorite animated films is still to this day Treasure Planet. And that is just what I think encompasses the Spelljammer setting so well, and is absolutely what I would love to build a whole campaign around. And like I said, even though I don't do one in that is, I have a number of homebrew items with my homebrew campaign, and one of which is a version of the Solar Surfer, because it's such a cool concept. And
yes, it is.
You can get a lot of inspiration from the Spelljammer setting without having to be in the astral sea or in these crystal spheres that a lot of the planets inhabit in and everything else. You can still get a lot of inspiration from there.
Treasure Planet is one of the best movies ever.
100%. Absolutely.
Yeah, Spelljammer's cool. I had a hard time with this deciding, because I too, like Nicole, I've not played much at all pre-written Wizards of the Coast stuff, but the one I have, which we've already talked about some, so I don't want to be repeating, is Icewind Dale. Maybe because there's a bunch of snow on the ground and it was like 10 degrees out today where I live. But to me, that was my first real experience of building a character, exploring a world, and really just like diving in. As a DM, I'm still trying to like capture how I remember feeling as a player, you know, in that setting. I just love, like, they have the 10 towns, which are quite literally 10 separate towns that all have a different feeling to them. The pre-written that's based there is Rime of the Frost Maiden, and you know, you're dealing with Oral, the Maiden of Winter and stuff. And we talked about before, but you know, you have snowy owl bears, you have white dragons, you have yetis roaming around all over the place. I just love a setting. It feels like it's a frontier, you know, it almost feels like a Western in a lot of ways, the snow, because, you know, everybody who lives there is either stuck and wants to get out, or they're, you know, tough as nails because it's negative 30 degrees all the time, you know. Which I think is cool, because I enjoy having a bit of a darker, grittier setting for D&D, because I find then the players, or even as the DM, you kind of bring the levity and the humor to it. So I always default to, I'd rather set the tone darker and serious, and then know naturally it's going to, you know, the mood will lighten as, you know, people come in and make jokes and stuff. And I love that in Icewind Dale. because it is literally a dark setting because it's often night there. But it's just a harsh, harsh environment, and I really like that. That's the kind of thing I look for and I enjoy, because it's, you're not just battling against monsters. You're literally surviving, you know, one moment at a time, if not one day at a time, you know, to just not freeze to death, which I think is really cool. Because again, you have, like, every decision you make as a player has weight to it. Then you really have to be on your toes all the time. You know, it's not that you shouldn't be, but when, you know, when you're traversing through a forest that's, you know, warm and cozy and lovely, and there's little critters skittering around, I think it's easier to feel relaxed than, like, you know, it's dark and something's probably been hunting you for like a week now and you still don't know what it is.
Yeah.
I think that's my favorite out of all the settings. So.
Yeah.
I was kind of up to a coin flip almost between Waterdeep and the Feywild. And I decided that I'm going to go with the Feywild. At least for right now, how I feel anyways. What I like about it is the, it's so whimsical, but yet so serious at the same time. Like the NPCs that you see, like I've played the Witchlight, the Beyond the Witchlight campaign. Amazing campaign. The entire campaign can be done without a single combat. It's really cool. I just love the setting, that how it mirrors the Sword Coast world, like the, I forget what plane, it's the normal plane, earthen plane, whatever they call it. It mirrors that world, but where, like, say a fire happens in a field or something like that. Like in the Feywild, maybe it's snowing. And I think that's really cool. I also love the NPCs that you do get into combats with when you, you know, choose to. Like the Harrigan, I think is that how you pronounce it? Harrigan, the like rabbit folk. Yeah. Those dudes are so cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I once played it was for a Christmas one shot. I played a Harrigan that was basically the Easter Bunny. It was a lot of fun.
But then also, like, it can get really serious too. And there's a witch in one of them. And the way that I played it and the way that it came out in my game, she ended up like killing my brother like in the game. And man, it was intense. And I was a paladin, and I was trying like every type of like revivify. I was trying like everything I could to try to like get this thing back. And she just, the fey magic that is in there. Oh man, it was wild. It leads to some really cool adventures. And another great spot that you can just say, hey, you get sucked into a portal into the fey realm, and there's a quick little one session break or whatever you need for something or whatever. But yeah, I think the Feywild's really cool. Who knows? Maybe tomorrow, maybe I'll like the Waterdeep more next time. But who knows? For today, I'm sticking with the Feywild.
Can't go wrong with the Feywild.
Oh man. Well, we're coming to a close here on our episode. As we do at the end of every episode for us, we're going to roll on our D100 table. And Nicole, why don't you go ahead and roll that D100 since you had the top of the initiative.
All right. We got 61.
61. Okay. And that is going to be... Game Master Fatigue. How do you prevent... as you're running campaigns, staying fresh, not being burnt out as a game master.
Okay. Oh my god! Can we just start talking about this now?
Sure. No, Steven.
Oh man, guys! Oh my goodness! All right, I know. All right, so next episode is going to be brought to you by me, because I'm just going to talk the entire time, because I have to talk. This literally happened today. Oh my gosh, man. Guys, episode 4, It's going to be awesome. You're going to love it. Share it with everybody. And I think it's better time than ever now. I think I speak from all of us. Thank you so much for all the support. Once again, it's been incredible what we have received from the community, support-wise, encouraging, criticisms, all of it. It's all been so great. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Again, I'm Jeff. Below me, we have Charlie, Nicole, and Jared. We're the Story Crafters. We'll see you next time.
See you guys.
See you safe.